And I walk into this bookstore, and there on the counter is the book on the Shroud. I was drawn to it immediately, absolutely drawn to it. I had never heard of it. I came home, I probably read it in one or two sittings and became an amateur syndonologist, one who studies the Shroud. The vitriol around this artifact is unbelievable. I mean, you get people jumping out of their clothes when they see this thing. Mm. On both sides of the aisle, some people go, wow. Other people go, oh, it's from Satan, you know, and this whole crazy thing. It's the most cosmic event in the entire history of the universe. And it's mind-boggling. And I still don't understand all the implications of it. And when you go on Google, they'll still say, you know, Shroud of Turin proved fake again. It is so misleading. It is fake news all day long. These people who write this stuff, you know, should offer an apology to the world because they're keeping the people of the world from forensic evidence of the greatest event in history.
Welcome back to ISO Insights. I'm your host, Matthew Foley. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest to me, a researcher, a type of archaeologist, if you will, a historian. L.A. Marzulli. He deals with strange phenomenon, historical relics, and all kinds of interesting subjects. And you can check out his website. He has many different subjects he talks about, including for believers who have had strange experiences with what popular culture terms, UFOs, aliens, even ghosts, paranormal activities, and who have a hard time understanding their experience in the context of a lot of church culture. He really helps those people to get context within the Christian faith and the Bible. So, Mr. L.A. Marzulli, thank you so much for coming on ISO Insights.
Hi, Matthew. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
And today we're going to hop right into a discussion which Brother Marzulli is going to be having a soon-released documentary film, and I'll give him a plug right here for it. And once it's released, we're going to get the little links you can click so you can go directly to it. But on that subject, the Shroud of Turin. A little fun fact about the Shroud of Turin. This has been a subject of debate, but it is a holy relic that's been kept by families in the Catholic Church for many centuries, and it's been under scrutiny. Protestants have a little bit of an allergy to relics because the reformers would talk about how, you know, you had all these fake relics that were passing around and the church would use it for people to escape purgatory or to get money. So addressing that first, there's kind of this layover in our culture, which has a lot of cynicism about things like the Shroud of Turin, but there's been extremely interesting facts. So Mr. L.A. Marzulli, what was your introduction to the Shroud of Turin?
Well, I've been a Christian for 45 years, and I remember 45 years ago, brand new Christian, and I'm looking for material. So I go to this little bookstore in Thousand Oaks, California, and a friend of mine, Harold Zander, we became very close at one point. He was the owner of the bookstore, and I walk into this bookstore, and there on the counter is the book on the Shroud. I was drawn to it immediately, absolutely drawn to it, and just blown away by what I had never heard of it. and I purchased the book. I came home. I probably read it in one or two sittings and became an amateur syndonologist, one who studies the Shroud. Mm-hmm. It's the vitriol around this artifact is unbelievable. I mean, you get people jumping out of their clothes when they see this thing. Mm. On both sides of the aisle, some people go, wow. Other people go, oh, it's from Satan, you know, and this whole crazy thing. you can start with the biblical narrative that the cloths were there when Peter goes into the tomb. So we know that they were there. The napkin was folded and set to the side. And there's a reason for that. So we'll start with the Sudarium of Oviedo. The Sudarium of Oviedo is the face cloth that when they took Jesus off the cross, they wrapped his head in this cloth out of respect for the dead, which leads us to another conversation. How do you kill God? Mm. And that's what no one saw. That's what Mary, the two Marys at the cross, and John and all the apostles, nobody gets it. The dragon, Satan, doesn't get it. Nobody understands it. How do you kill God? That's why the people are going, come down, save yourself, come down. They know he can do it, but he doesn't do it. And that's what defeated Satan at the cross. People don't understand that because the dragon's going, Satan's going, well, we can't kill God. You know, how's this going to work? But you do kill God. The body lays in the tomb for 3 days. And then, of course, the resurrection is the type of the rapture of the church. He's the firstborn of the dead so that he may be preeminent in all things. It's the most cosmic event in the entire history of the universe. And it's mind-boggling. And I still don't understand all the implications of it. So the sudarium wraps the head and they bring the body into the tomb, which is basically like a stone's throw away from a crucifixion. This is why we believe a Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem is the site where he was crucified and then buried. And recently they found archaeological evidence around the edicule, which is where the tomb was, of there was a garden there. They've done the, there was a low garden wall. There's pollen from plants and stuff. There was a garden, which, you know, once again, reflects the biblical narrative. So the sudarium of Oviedo is this blood-soaked cloth, and it doesn't lay with the body in the shroud. It's folded and placed next to the body. Why is that? Anything with blood from the person who passed, who was killed, anything with blood goes in the tomb with him. That's the Jewish law. That's the sudarium. So now, go to the Shroud of Turin. So here's the shroud. This is what it looks like. If you're standing about 6 to 8 feet away, this is what it looks like. It's a very faint image. You can see a man, but that's all you see. Mm-hmm. And it was this way for basically hundreds of years. There's pollen on the shroud that only comes from in and around Jerusalem. That's number one. Number two, there's no paint on the shroud at all. Anywhere. There's absolutely no paint on it. So it's not a painting. This is the most probed artifact on the planet.
Wow.
The most probed artifact. So Secunda Pia, it's 1898. Photography has now been invented. Secunda Pia goes in with the old wooden box camera, certainly not the iPhone, right? Not the iPhone. So he's sitting there with the wood box. He takes a glass plate, puts it in there. He takes a headshot, takes all these different shots. Now he's back in his dark room with the glass plate, and he's doing this. I'm just getting over a cold, excuse me.
And you're fine.
He's expecting to see a negative image on the shroud or on the glass plate because he's doing this. He's expecting to see a negative image come up. What comes up is this.
Wow.
And he almost drops the glass plate. And he thinks to himself, my gosh, I'm the first person in almost 2,000 years to see what he looked like.
Wow.
And that's him. That's the Lord.
I'll tell you why I'm so interested in the Shroud of Turin. It's because it's ancient. It's because it's mysterious. And it's because a lot of people have written about it. But you know what? I don't think I have the time or the money to buy all the books for it, but I will listen to a podcast or a teaching about it. So these days, that's really what people want. I think that's why you're listening right now, is you want access to something that's easy, that's quick, and that gives you the information you're looking for. Well, I've got a special offer for you. If you want to have easy access to teachings at your own pace, you're not facing any deadlines, if you don't want to purchase books, but you want to learn things that nobody else is talking about, ISO School of Ministry can help you. We're going to talk about theology. We're going to talk about books of the Bible. Leading teachers like Perry Stone will cover it. We talk about prophecy with Mark Bills. We talk about Hebraic roots with Bill Cloud. So many subjects many other schools and seminaries just don't really talk about. And we have a special deal for you. You can follow the link I'm going to provide here. Regularly, we charge $99 for the All Access Pass, but we're doing this special deal for new students here and now, $59 instead of the regular $99 for the All Access Pass subscription, and a $20 gift card thrown in. So please, for this next week only, this offer is going to stand in this link. Please take advantage of it. Go ahead and click and check it out, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Back to L.A. Marzulli and the Shroud of Turin.
So when you take the entire shroud, it looks like this, and you can see all the scourge marks, which is incredibly horrific on the body. We're just not talking. Mel Gibson got it right. He is basically whipped to within a half an inch of his life.
Wow.
I mean, how he even survived that is beyond. That's why he dies about 3 hours into the cross, because he's in shock. The helmet of thorns over the head, and you can see the blood marks. It's a helmet of thorns. You can see the blood marks like right there.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, that in itself is excruciating. But then you've got the nails, and the nails, look at the exit wound on the wrist right there. See that?
Mm-hmm.
It's in the, so we show all this in the shroud in our film. So how was it done? Right now, there's $1 million reward for anybody who can duplicate the shroud.
Wow.
$1 million. No, wow. There are no takers because no one knows how it was done. How do you go from this to this when if it's a 15th century forgery, then they didn't know a camera was going to be invented.
Yeah.
So, you know, and what we're looking at, this thing is so anatomically correct. And there's only one man in history where you can see the right here. You can see that's the wound in the side right there.
Mm.
That's the blood and mortar coming from it.
Wow.
Notice wow. The nail is not in the palm, but the Romans would hold the hand like this.
Yeah.
They would squeeze it together and take the nail, and then they would drive it so it would come out like this in the wrist. See the way that the angle is about like that. And that's exactly what we see on the man on the shroud.
Wow.
So
wasn't that the only way to keep the bones intact as well,
exactly,
within the hand?
Yeah. Yeah. So no bones are broken. He's laying on the cross. He's hanging on the cross. That blood-soaked cloth called the Sudarium of Oviedo has been in Oviedo, Spain, for since the 7th century.
Wow.
So when you take the Sudarium and you put it over the face, because it's a face cloth, when you put it over the face of Jesus, there are 120 points of congruency.
Wow.
So that face cloth was on this guy. There's no doubt. Absolutely no doubt. And remember, the face cloth is folded because it's got blood on it. They're not gonna bury it in the shroud, but the body is laying there in the tomb in a state of rigor mortis. The knees are drawn up. The shoulders are hunched like this. People will go, well, all of his beard isn't plucked out. Well, that's not what it says.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't pluck out all of his beard, but they took out a good portion of it. There's no doubt. This is God's calling card. This is forensic evidence of the greatest event in the history of the planet, the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. And this is the only artifact like it. Let's talk about the carbon-14 dating.
Yeah.
And in our film, we really drilled down into this. So the protocols that were set in place, you know, you just don't go into Turin and go, hey, we'd like to get some carbon-14 dating here. You know, there's a whole series of protocols. They were supposed to take three different samples from three different places on the shroud. So three, one, let's say two, let's say up here, three. They didn't do that. And they the team was ready to take the samples. These guys in the black suits come in, shoo everybody out of the room. About 3 or 4 hours later, they come back into the room. Guess what? You can only take one sample from the corner of the shroud. So they do that. And it comes back 15th century forgery, 15th century. And when you go on Google, they'll still say, you know, Shroud of Turin proved fake again. It is so misleading. It is fake news all day long. It is horrible journalism. And these people who write this stuff, you know, should offer an apology to the world because they're keeping the people of the world from forensic evidence of the greatest event in history. It's never been duplicated. Now, in regards to the carbon-14 dating, Joe Marino and his wife, Sue, and this is before I ever met them, and Joe Marino is one of the centerpieces in our film, he and Russ Brayalt. They are professional syndonologists. And it was Sue, Joe Marino's wife, who said, you know, something's not right here. And she realized that they took the sample from the corner of the shroud. So they wrote a paper on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, surely there's got to be something wrong with this section of the shroud. So the gentleman who was part of the Shroud of Turin research project, STIRP, went in. And that was led by John Jackson, by the way. And this man was in charge of looking at the pollen, looking at the samples of a shroud. And he went in with his microscope, and lo and behold, it's cotton fibers end-to-end splicing with the linen, which was probably done. It doesn't look anything like the rest of the cloth. It was a repair job, which skews the carbon-14 dating. Moreover, he was actually able to get the Rhea sample a few years later or whatever, and the Reyes sample was as close to the original place as you can possibly get. And wow. Once again, it's different than the original cloth. We know that for a fact. So how much information do we need before the goofy carbon 14 dating is undone? It's never been duplicated in any way, shape, or form. And yeah. I call it God's calling card.
Yeah. Incredible. And isn't it true that when people look at for those with no introduction to the Shroud of Turin, when you're looking at the photo and you see these large gaps and dark lines, those are burns that took place because there was a monastery, I believe it was set on fire in the Middle Ages.
Correct.
The critique about the carbon dating, which stems, I've heard that when they spliced together, it was nuns who spliced together this medieval lesser quality. When you look at it under a microscope, you can see it's lesser quality linen with the actual Middle Eastern linen.
It's actually cotton, not linen.
It's cotton. I see.
They dyed the cotton to look like linen. Mm. And it's end-to-end splices done by the Poor Sisters of Clare.
Wow.
Which is, mind-boggling. How was that done?
Wow. I have a question here. First of all, what's baffling to me, because we have a cynicism. We have historical cynicism about, I don't know why fully, you may have a good answer, but for some reason, I don't know what's from the British culture of the way that their school and their history, their museum of history, and the way that they handle local people's oral traditions and native people's oral traditions. But we also in the West look back on Catholic oral traditions and locals within the Arab nations that tell us about certain landmarks or locations, and we have a heavy amount of doubt. So when Constantine's mother comes in and says, "This is the tomb where Jesus was buried," we don't say, "Well, maybe she asked some questions from the locals before dismissing her, like, I'm some crazy lady. She probably didn't even know what she was talking about." So that being said, what's kind of the history that's been passed down about the Shroud? Because it, as far as the Shroud goes, it's mind-boggling to me that the face cloth was kept in a separate location in Europe from the Shroud itself, but you have all those points of validation when you overlap them. So what's the history there? What family kept it over the years?
Well, the Shroud moves throughout the Middle East, just like the Siddharm. Remember, Romans come in and sack Jerusalem in AD 70. Mm-hmm. So the Christians get out for the most part. That's probably when the Shroud, because you can't do it anymore because this woman, a professional textile restorer, vacuumed the Shroud. Can you even believe that? Can you even believe it?
That's insane.
And then she stretched it. Basically, this woman should be arrested, really, in my opinion, with all due respect. Why destroying all the forensic evidence for later, scrutiny by other scientists. But you can trace, and they did this, you can trace the pollen, and you can trace the Shroud going into Turkey, in through Europe, it settles in France, and then finally it winds up in Italy. These relics were passed around. And this is why a lot of people go, especially a lot of evangelicals, a lot of Protestants, it's a Catholic forgery, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Not so fast, citizen. It's not that at all. It's at the Turin, which is run by the Catholic Church, but it has nothing to do with the Catholics per se.
Yeah.
In the sense that, they didn't create this thing. It's not a medieval forgery. And again, just show me how a 15th century medieval forger is going to do this. So when you take a picture, you're going to get this. Just show me that, before 400 years before the invention of photography or whatever. I mean, the whole thing is absurd. And there's no paint on the Shroud. When you take the cloth and you backlight it like this, when you stretch the cloth out, and this was done by the Shroud of Turin Research Project team. So everything you backlight it, you put a light behind it. You can see everything. You can see the blood stains, you can see the watermarks, but you can't see the body.
Mm.
The body's not there. So how does that work? How does that work? So it's so enigmatic. And I just love some of the skeptics that write me. And I just say, look, you haven't done any homework. You're just shooting from the hip and mouthing what you've heard. Spend an hour on shroud.com. Joe Marino runs that site. It used to be run by Barry Schwartz, who is also in our film. Barry, we actually dedicated the film to the Right Honorable Barry Schwartz and Dame Isabel Pixick. I interviewed them years ago when they were both alive. So we used those interviews in our documentary. So when Barry passed away last year, Joe Marino was bequeathed the site, shroud.com, because Joe's written several books on the Shroud, and he's an expert on the Shroud of Turin. And Joe Marino and Russ Brayalt, again, are the tentpoles in our film. So Barry Schwartz spent, out of 120 hours that the Shroud of Turin Research Project STURP team had to examine the Shroud, he was there for about 110. I mean, he was up constantly, took thousands and thousands of photographs of the Shroud. I mean, and I was in his house. I interviewed Barry. I was in his house. In his bedroom, he had this blown up life-size.
Wow.
In his bedroom, hanging on the wall.
Wow.
And Barry's Jewish.
That was his life, man. That's crazy.
That was his life.
Wow. So when I've heard all the different details about the Shroud, from the samples taken of the blood, what they could recover, the DNA, the chemical composition, and then, bafflingly, the position the body was in when the image was burned in the cloth, it's telling what, in my view, is the most stunning thing about the Shroud, is the story that it portrays when we analyze it. So what happened to the body of the man in the Shroud? What story is it? What is the picture telling us?
Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. Stop right there. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. The rapture of the church, when we go up, we go up like Elijah, like Jesus, and like the two witnesses. When I use a little prop here. When we go up, we don't go like this. Mm-hmm. We're going up like Jesus went up, but we're changed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. Our DNA is changed in that moment. Jesus is the prototype of the rapture of the church because he's fully God and fully man. Now he's got a glorified body. That happens in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye, when he's in the tomb. Wow. I believe, and so do others, that space-time as we know it ceased to exist for a fraction of a second. Had it gone any longer, the universe as we know it more than likely wouldn't exist. So he's levitated because space-time doesn't exist. He's levitated off the slab. The Shroud is pulled tight. And as the cloth folds, his body turns into light, and the cloth just folds down like this, just floats down. And there's the image, because you've got a frontal image and you've got a dorsal image, and the two are completely unconnected from each other.
Really?
Yeah, it's split in half. You've got the frontal image and you've got the dorsal image.
Wow.
Yeah, it is the most, this is what I mean. Folks, if you're watching this and you're going, oh, Marcelli, he's always, excuse me, ignorance and arrogance is the deadly combination. Mm-hmm. If you think you know anything about the Shroud, but you've never read anything on it, then maybe you should go to shroud.com and spend an hour, just an hour, because you could spend hours. You could spend a week there. Just spend 1 hour and look at the evidence, the overwhelming amount of evidence that points to its authenticity. Am I going to go to the Shroud of Turin and kneel before it and worship it? Absolutely not. I worship the risen Savior. But what this is forensic evidence. Hello, forensic evidence of the greatest event in history. And you know, my brother, I love him, but he's an atheist. Wow. And when I show him the Shroud and I go, okay, Tony, you know, you're a scientist. So how was it done? Well, and he has no idea, nor does anybody else. Wow. Nor does anybody else. And all the duplicates that they try to make don't look anything like this at all, in any way, shape, or form. And they didn't know what it was till 1898, when Secunda Pia goes in and takes the pictures, and then everything changes.
Wow. What kind of blast of light? I've heard you talk about this. What intensity would it take to reproduce that image?
It's a really good question. And even in modernity, with all the science that we have, plasma, some sort of burst of energy, some sort of plasma. Remember, think about this, and this we talk about this in the film. So Moses sees the burning bush that does not burn. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Wow.
What is the pillar of fire that leads the Israelis around? What's that? Huh. What are the tongues of flame that appear on the apostles and others at the day of Pentecost? What's that? What is a tongue of flame?
Oh my
See where
word.
I'm going with this?
Yeah.
See, and it's in the Bible.
Yeah.
So explain to me first the burning bush. Then explain to me the pillar of fire. Then explain the tongues of flame at the day of Pentecost.
Wow.
So is it whatever this is, the holy fire appears in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre for the last 1,700 years. And originally, the Orthodox priest didn't even go into the edicule. The edicule is the building that surrounds the slab. So now he goes in, they close the doors, they search him for matches, they search the Muslims, Jews, everybody goes in, unless they have a secret compartment in there. And all the Orthodox patriarchs talk about the same thing. They go in there, they kneel before the slab, they say certain prayers, and all of a sudden, this blue undulating fire-like liquid appears on the slab, and then it turns into a pillar, and he lights his candles, and he goes out. And we show this in the film. There's one woman in the film, she's got the candle in her hand, and she's doing this, and the flame is like this long. It's like almost a foot long, right? And she's doing this with a sweater. I mean, you can't do that with a real, you just can't.
Wow.
And then there's others that Giulio Fonti takes it and holds it under his beard like this.
Man.
And then inhales it. It's good That's for about crazy. 10 minutes, and then it turns into regular fire. So people, you know, and what's amazing is the West has never heard about this.
Yeah.
You know, I've been a Christian 45 years. I didn't hear about it till last year, but there it is. So it's hidden in plain sight. Everybody and the Greek Orthodox and the Orthodox world knows about the holy fire. Nobody in the West knows about it at all. Isn't it just like God to have a mystery hidden in plain sight for 1700 years? And now he gives, you know, me and my business partner, Gil Zimmerman, and we're doing a film on it. I mean, it's Elmer Fudd and Porky Pig. I mean, it's like, what?
Oh, man.
I mean, it's
crazy.
What an honor. What a total honor. So, you know.
And, you know, this is the last question I had for our closing here, which was about this holy fire. I'd never heard of anything like that in my whole life. But for those that are listening, I'm going to contextualize this because I know you haven't heard of it. So there's a whole backstory that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is built over the tomb of Christ where he rose from the dead. And it's got a long-standing history. And I know a lot of Protestants are like, the garden tomb's over here. Well, you can check out Brother Marzulli's video on his channel about that, actually. But the backstory is Constantine's mother was told by the locals, this is, by tradition, the tomb Jesus was buried in. And as Brother Marzulli mentioned earlier, there's archaeological evidence lining up all the characteristics in the New Testament of the tomb with this tomb. So when Jesus rose from the dead, and we're talking about this burst of light, this glorification that shone on the shroud, burned into the shroud, there's a connection with this story of this holy fire that's left behind. So like the fire in the bush that Moses saw, that God said the angel of Yahweh will dwell within the fire, and then he dwells within the pillar of fire in the wilderness. And all of this is connected with Christ and him being glorified and dwelling in the eternal fire of God that the Bible refers to. So can you tell me historically a little bit in closing about this holy fire that you learned about from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre?
Well, I think it's Gregory of Nyssa talks about that Peter in the first century saw the holy fire at the sepulchre. And to your point, you know, St. Helen, Constantine's mother, goes down there in the fourth century. Now, where was it? Well, at that point in the fourth century, and most people don't know this, this is why it's not the garden tomb. That came in the 19th century. That tomb, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, originally, when St. Helen got there, when Helen, Constantine's mother, arrived, she said, well, where was it? And everybody who's there goes, you see that Temple of Venus over there? That Temple of Venus is right over the site. The Romans, when they came in after the Bar Kokhba revolt around AD 130, all the Jews are kicked out till the fourth century, number one. Number two, they take and they erect the Temple of Jupiter on the Temple Mount. Remember, the Temple Mount is there, but the temple is no longer there. That was completely destroyed in AD 70.
Pushed
over. So now they built the Temple of Jupiter on the Temple Mount, and then the Temple of Venus over the site. So the locals know where it is, and they go, see that Temple of Venus over there? It's built right over the site. Mm. They go and they deconstruct it. They find Calvary. They find the cross. They find the shroud. I mean, it's all like, you know,
incredible.
Yeah, it's all there. I'm sorry, I said Petrov. They don't find the shroud, but they found, apparently, according to what some people believe, nails, the cross. Because remember, anything that has blood on it is buried with the person, according to Jewish tradition.
Wow. And this fire, because this is something I'm not fully clear on, but for clarification, is this something that is just dwelling there perpetually in the tomb, or is it something that manifests around?
Remember, the Greek Orthodox Resurrection Sunday, or what most people call Easter, is different than the West, and it manifests on the Greek Orthodox calendar of Easter Saturday.
Wow,
the Saturday before. And so, I mean, you can go online and you can look at it. There's always skeptics. I mean, I totally get that. But, you know, Giulio Fonti, we show this in the film. So Giulio Fonti has two candles like this. So he's got a little experiment set up. So he's got the two candles like this. And he lights this one with a cigarette lighter and this one with the holy fire. Then he takes a cloth and puts it over the candles, where the cigarette lighter burns right through the cloth in a matter of seconds. This one, lit with the holy fire, it only singes it, and the singeing looks like that on the cloth.
Wow,
it's the closest thing that we've ever had that shows, you know, why doesn't the holy fire burn? You know, why doesn't it burn for about 10 minutes? Why didn't it burn through the cloth? He's holding the linen. You can see it in the film. He's holding the piece of linen directly over the flames. The flame that's lit with a common lighter burns right through the cloth. The other one just singes it. How is it possible?
Why do you think that is? Fun closing question.
Well, I think it's the Lord doing stuff. I'm amazed that it's been hidden from the West for centuries. For 1,000 years, I mean, nobody knew about this thing until recently. It's just like God to take something and go, well, in the last days, I'm going to roll this out, which is what he's done. Yeah. I mean, this, in my opinion, is the greatest. It's a forensic evidence of the greatest event in all of history. And it, you know, scoffers can scoff all they want, but go to shroud.com and spend an hour there. Then get back to me. Just don't say, oh, it's a Catholic, blah, blah, blah. You know, please. Ignorance and arrogance, deadly combination. You need to do some research on this. I have. I've spent a lot of time and a lot of years looking at this. It is God's calling card. First of all, how would you duplicate? Just look at this. How would you duplicate that? You don't see it here. You don't see any of it here. See that?
Yeah.
I mean, you see a very faint outline of a man, and there's the negative from Secunda Pia's picture.
Incredible.
Just
incredible.
Explain that.
You can. And for those listening as we close, the Bible makes it very clear. God's not afraid of things like these. Aaron's rod, the original tablets of the commandments kept in the Ark of the Covenant. Are you kidding me? Manna. And what was it? They had the serpent on the rod. Eventually, God had to get rid of it because they turned it into an idol. Yeah. And that's what he dealt with Israel throughout most of the Old Testament was idolatry. But you have something like this that's kept in perpetuity because it is a symbol of God's faithfulness, and it proves what God actually said. So, Mr. Marzulli, thank you so much for coming on. It's been incredible having you, and I hope everybody will go and check out his website and the dedicated page to the Shroud of Turin.
Matthew, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll catch you guys next time on ISO Insights.